And we are live here on Facebook on Augusta Free Press. Thanks for joining us. I am Chris Graham, joined by Crystal Graham. And we're talking here just moments after the end of the Friday press conference from Governor Ralph Northam as he rolled out the plan, the phase one of his three-phase plan to reopen Virginia. And Crystal, we have the news here. And things are moving ahead. It looks like a week from now, we'll begin that slow reopen in the direction of going back to normal.
Yeah, it does seem that way. And again, the governor is calling this phase safer at home. We're told that this phase could last anywhere from 2 to 4 weeks. It is interesting, Chris, and I'll let you report on this because you're the one who actually listened into the news conference, but it does seem like it really varies. You know, some businesses, obviously, as a result of some of these things, are not going to be able to reopen at all, whereas faith communities, churches, we'll be able to open, with much larger numbers. So I'm going to let you kind of break it down. And then if there's anything you don't cover, I'll come back for a follow-up. But I did find it very interesting that that really even some businesses, like we had thought that maybe businesses like gyms would be able to open up with 10 or less people in them. And it turns out that that's not the case. Do you want to break it down?
Oh, well, sure. You've already started there. Restaurants and breweries can reopen if they have outdoor seating already approved as part of their business operations at 50% of capacity for outdoor seating. So that's not going to be a lot of restaurants. And Crystal, you said you've heard from some restaurants that they're saying that they're not going to reopen until they can go 100%. I'm sure. And those that are doing takeout and delivery only already may be thinking sooner than that. But those with outdoor capacity, probably largely breweries, actually, at least in our area, not a lot of places that are restaurants that have a lot of outdoor seating capacity, but wherever that may be, those with outdoor seating can open up to 50%. Non-essential retail. This is one that caught my interest. We've seen like the Targets and the Walmarts have been open throughout this process, just like grocery stores have been. So-called non-essential retail, places like, I guess, Kohl's and clothing stores like that and similar ventures as that, can reopen up to 50% of capacity. So that's actually, that was something that caught me by surprise. I'm not as surprised as you about gyms, to be honest, Crystal. The idea that gyms would even want to reopen with only 10 people would really not make a lot of sense to me. I think a phase two reopening, and we haven't seen what phase two would look like yet, but where you can have more people in would make it more economically feasible for gyms to reopen. But gyms can only reopen if they have outdoor possibilities. So I don't know what that even means, but you know, that's what it was said on the governor's chart today. You did mention churches. Churches, this was a surprise and a pleasant surprise for those who've not been able to go to church for a couple of months. Churches can reopen at 50% of their indoor capacity. So we are, I mean, literally where we're based, our home office here in Waynesboro, we're surrounded by 1, 2, 3, at least 4 churches within a block and a half of us. And they've been quiet for weeks and weeks. They can theoretically reopen next week. And I'm sure that the folks have been chomping at the bit to be able to do this at 50% of indoor capacity. So we'll be interested to see how that has impact. Also, I know that this was something you said your Facebook friends were interested in. Private campgrounds. Private campgrounds will reopen in phase one. And so that's big news. The state and national parks in Virginia will reopen in the daytime. There will be some limited opening hours during the evening, I guess overnight hours, that kind of thing, with gatherings limited at 10 per person. And beaches then also, at least in phase one, still only open for fishing and exercise. And that's from memory, Crystal. Have I missed anything?
No, I think that's most of it there, Chris. And then again, I think the governor is still saying that phase one also still includes people to continue social distancing, teleworking when possible.
I did miss one.
Oh, you did?
Personal grooming. As soon as you started talking about that.
Personal grooming, you're right.
Personal grooming by appointment only. Personal grooming is hair salons.
Nail salons, things of that nature. Yeah, so that's by appointment only and with social distancing in place.
It's just social distancing and face mask required, both of the patrons and the workers. So
okay. Well, there will be a lot of people that will be happy for that news.
Everybody out there but me, because I groom myself, right? But you know, Crystal, your hair looks great. Nobody would notice any difference there. But I'm sure now your hair is a lot longer than it's been for a long time, right, Crystal? I mean, I'm sure it's you haven't.
It's longer and there's roots, but I'm not going to be one of those that rush in because I think there are people who need more maintenance than I do. So I'm going to let this cycle kind of play out for 2 or 3 weeks. There's a lady in Waynesboro I know who's a hairdresser who sometimes puts some conditioning treatments in my hair. And she sent out an email basically saying that she's booking appointments now starting for the 15th. And she's starting with her clients, obviously, who normally come in. You know, there are a number of women, Chris, believe it or not, who go in like every 3 weeks or every 4 weeks for color, for cut, you know, things of that nature. So she's reaching out to her clients kind of on a priority basis based on who she's had to put off as a result of the pandemic. So certainly I think that there will be a mass rush of people going in to get touched up. And so I'll let that kind of phase out. And then a few weeks from now, I'll go in for my touch up. I'm not in any major rush. So the other thing, of course, is that the governor, as I was saying, wants people to still continue social distancing, teleworking. I know a lot of people are probably concerned about that. Does this mean we go back to work next Friday? It doesn't seem to be the case. If you're working from home now, that should probably continue. Wearing face coverings in public and continuing the ban on social gatherings of more than 10 people. So again, limiting the number of people getting together. And according to the governor, you know, again, as I said, this should last 2 to 4 weeks. And then he'll make a decision about when we'll move into what is essentially phase two, which should ease restrictions a little bit more on restaurants. You mentioned what I said earlier, Chris. I went to the grocery store this morning to get a couple of holdover items. Normally, I'm trying to go to the grocery store only once a week, but I missed a few things this week, so I had to go back. And I did run into a friend who was telling me that a restaurant owner in town was saying that they're not going to open up again until full capacity. And there's a lot of reasons behind that, but one of them is they don't have outdoor seating. You'd hate to bring back your employees on a part-time basis, because you bring your employees back on a part-time basis, what happens to their unemployment claims? You know, are they still able to make that up? You know, it puts a lot of additional paperwork on your employees as well. This particular restaurant owner felt like it would be more appropriate to wait until all restrictions are lifted and they can open at 100% capacity and then bring everyone back, you know, full-time instead of part-time. I heard from another business, an employee of another business in town recently who got that payroll protection. You know, they got the funding from that, from the Small Business Administration, and they were being brought back at 29 hours per week. And I know there was some concern there because, again, that's part-time, you know, versus full-time. So, you know, the Small Business Administration has been very tight-lipped as far as what they are going to do as far as whether people have to repay those loans or not. You've been told that if you keep your payroll at about 75% of what it was before the pandemic, then that grant that you received should be forgiven. But from what I'm reading in headlines nationwide is that basically the parameters of that are kind of changing every day. And so that if you do end up having to repay it, it should be at a very low percentage rate of like 2%. So even if you don't meet their guidelines for how many hours employees are working, there's some other things that factor into that, rent and some other things. But if you don't meet the guidelines when it's all said and done, you should be able to pay that back at a very favorable rate. And I'm not sure what the terms are for that. So just, you know, that there's a lot up in the air, I guess is what you could say, Chris. The other thing I thought that you could break down really well for people that are tuned in is, you know, Governor Northam was asked at the end of the news conference by a reporter a question related to the numbers. You know, he had originally said that until the numbers were flattened or until we didn't see a rise, that you wouldn't see Virginia reopening. Obviously, things are starting to reopen despite the fact that numbers are going up. But
that's not true.
It's all relative, right? Right? Because the reason, and again, I'm just going to give a little preface and then you can correct anything that I may say that's wrong. But, you know, when we originally started testing here in Virginia, we might have been doing 200 tests a day. Eventually, that got to about a 2,000 on average test per day. And a lot of that had to do with the fact that we were very limited in the number of tests that were available in Virginia. Now, through some additional measures in this task force that is in place, they're moving in the direction of testing 10,000 people per day. I think last time I heard it was around 8,000 people per day. with capacity to go up to around 10,000 people per day. This isn't the case anymore, where their own people are only getting tested if they have symptoms and they're going to, you know, to a testing center to get tested because they're not feeling well. Now they're going into nursing homes and long-term care facilities. They're going into some low-income areas of certain communities. The governor talked about how they were doing that in Richmond as kind of a project there. They're going in and they're proactively testing people. And many of these people who may even end up testing positive are actually asymptomatic, meaning they don't have any symptoms of COVID-19. They're not sick. What the governor reinforced in his news conference today was that the reason that Virginia is on the edge of reopening, looking at that date of Friday, May 15th, as starting that phase one of reopening, is because we have not had the demand on hospitals. We have a large number of PPE or personal protective equipment now on hand, which was something that we didn't have at the beginning of this pandemic. And because they really are starting to, we're not seeing the surge there. So while, you know, I know, Chris, that you say that you read and you have people commenting and things that numbers continue to go up in Virginia, as we test more people in Virginia, it's natural that numbers will go up. Do you want to break that down a little bit more? Because you've read a lot more and you've done a lot more stories pertaining to that than I have.
Well, yeah, it's frustrating to hear, like, that reporter who was talking on the governor's news conference today. Number of cases is one metric. It'd be like if you're talking about a baseball game, there's 27 outs in a baseball game, and hey, we played extra innings and there were 33 outs. Why do we have six more outs in a game? Because you played more innings. I mean, when you do more testing, you're going to find more things. But the important number is not the number of cases confirmed. The important number is the hospitalization rate. Another important number, you don't flatten the curve to stop people from dying. Unfortunately, people are going to die, especially when 60% of the deaths in this country from COVID-19 are in nursing homes, and the average age of death is 82. It's unfortunate that people are dying, but we got to look at where those cases are. You got to look at where the hospitalizations are coming from. You got to look at where the deaths are coming from. If we saw large numbers of, let's be honest about it, if we saw large numbers of young, healthy people, if we saw large numbers of kids and young adults being impacted by this, that would be different. That would also be flu season. Flu season hits kids harder. It hits young adults harder because those are more active people in the population. And the flu transfers differently than COVID does. We've learned a lot about COVID and how it transmits. And actually, it transmits a lot more in home settings. It transmits a lot more in settings like a nursing home and actually in prisons. And it's interesting. There was a study done of prisoners in Virginia. And half the people in a prison system, one set of prisons in Virginia, were tested positive for COVID. 90% of those cases were asymptomatic, and there were no deaths among those people. Very few hospitalizations. But that's a generally younger population than certainly a nursing home is. So it spreads more in settings where people are more in closer quarters, certainly. But then the impact is that the death occurs in people who are more exposed, either by age or by age and underlying conditions. And so if you look at a raw number and say, well, there were 800 cases confirmed yesterday and 900 cases confirmed today, that's more. But then, yes, Crystal, you're pointing out that we were doing 3,000 tests a day just a couple of weeks ago. Now we're doing 8,000 tests a day. You're going to be the more testing you do, the more cases you're going to find, because all of a sudden, you're not just testing people who are coming into hospitals or to doctor's offices and saying, I have all these symptoms that match up to COVID. You need to test me. Now you're seeing more, not quite randomized testing, but you're seeing more tests of a wider population. And so people who aren't as sick, people who have been exposed in some way but are asymptomatic. And so the important number. When we talk about flattening the curve, the important number is the impact on the hospital system. And in Virginia's, that's what the governor answered to that reporter's continued line of questioning. There were actually a couple of follow-ups to try to make the same point. And the governor stayed true to the numbers. The numbers are that if you've been looking at the Virginia Healthcare and Hospital Association's dashboard, like I have every day, several times a day for the last month and a half, that number has stayed consistently between 1,400 and 1,600 hospitalizations per day in Virginia, and a consistent number. It's not like it's 1,400 new per day. That's just been the number consistent dating back about 6 weeks. And that's in a hospital system with about 18,000 available beds. Actually, and Virginia hospitals have added capacity for almost 4,000 more if there are surges related to COVID. So we actually have closer to, you know, 7,000 or 8,000 hospital beds capacity, only 1,400 to 1,600 a day being used by COVID patients. We have more than enough space, and that's, and the governor even noted that our hospital capacity rates have been impacted in the last week, because last week the governor lifted the ban on elective surgeries. We have, so now more people are going back to the doctor for elective surgeries, for their regular appointments, for their cancer treatments, and things of that nature. And our hospital numbers are still very strong in Virginia. We have more than enough space. Now, he's pointing out that the reason for this phased-in approach is we want to see, especially this first phase. I think this first phase will be the one that will really, really determine the speed of the future phases. If we see in this first phase that the numbers are still staying pretty consistent, I think we'll kind of breeze through phase two and get to phase three, which phase three is pretty much the end of all regulations in Virginia, from what the governor laid out last week. If the numbers go up a little bit, we may stay in this phase one a little longer. But you know, the trends that I'm seeing, Crystal, are telling me that we're going to do just fine through this. But I understand the slow reopening. As much as you might want to be critical of that, you know, and I say you, just anybody out there watching us, why are we taking so long to do this? Well, I mean, we've been doing this for 8 weeks now. It's time. Let's just see what the numbers do. Let's just watch the trends. From what I have been reading into this, it seems like those trends will probably stay consistent. We just want to make sure. So that's why, you know, starting next week, we have a couple of weeks. It's going to take a little bit longer than a lot of folks would like, including me, but hopefully we'll get through this in a safe way.
Yeah, so it seems like the soonest that we could possibly kind of roll into that new phase two would be, looking at a calendar here, May 29th would be the date that we could possibly look at that. So I'm sure the governor will be making regular updates. I'm sure at least we would have some kind of notification, you know, around May 25th, you know, if not sooner than that, as to, you know, if things are still staying the way that they, you know, that, well, you're talking about there.
We won't even need the governor to tell us that to some degree. We'll be watching the numbers. And I'll tell you, we'll start watching these numbers more closely and reporting out, because one thing that frustrates me, Crystal, is just like that reporter who asked several questions at the press conference today. I think that a lot of people misunderstand numbers, and it's easy because we're seeing so much out there in the mainstream media. And boy, I'm talking about mainstream media. I'm sounding like a conservative. I'm not. I'm a progressive. I'm a liberal. I'm a Democrat. I have been all my life. But I think there's been some bad reporting really marking this whole process the last couple of months. And I think it's been a scare tactic kind of thing. It feels like to me the media is kind of baiting us to click. They're baiting us to watch. But this isn't about the number of cases. You know, and even a couple of things the governor said today frustrated me a little bit. He said, you know, we're going to live with this virus for months and maybe even years. You know, we're 100 years past the Spanish flu. That Spanish flu of 1918 that killed millions of people in the world and you know, a couple million people here in America. The strains of the flu that we deal with now are strains of the Spanish flu from over 100 years ago. Yes, there are coronaviruses. The cold is a coronavirus, not COVID-19, but it is part of that family. This is something that, yes, we'll be dealing with forever, but it's not like we're saying that the world needs to be shut down forever. It's a little frustrating to see all, you know, there's so much negative reporting going on right now. People are scared because they've been told to be scared. They've been told for weeks, be scared, be afraid for your life. What I would tell you is don't be afraid for your life. The bulk of people watching this right now, this is something that has a morbidity that is comparable to other things that we are used to and we deal with on a regular basis. Your chance of survival from COVID is 99.8%. And that's similar to other things. I'm not going to say what, because if I do, Facebook will probably take this video down, because by God, if you say something in this day and age, you might get censored. But I'm just telling you, it's not a death sentence at all. It's not even thing close. You have more of a chance of dying if you fall down your steps in the morning going out to get your paper than you do from a lot of things out there that you're being told right now are going to be deadly to you. So just chill it out. And I'm telling that to the media people, just chill. You know, let's stop scaring people like you who are watching right now. Let's stop with that crap, because it's not productive. And so I understand, like Crystal, you talked about the restaurant owner who said, until I can get to 100% capacity, I'm not going to open my restaurant back up. I don't blame him, because right now people are just, there are so many people who are just, oh gosh, I just still don't want to leave my house.
Well, and that, yeah, I was talking with a colleague at the grocery store. Like I said, when I went today, I was talking with someone there, and they were saying the exact same thing, Chris. Even when doors reopen, there will be some people who are hesitant to come back out just because the governor says it's okay. And we've said all along, you know, you need to do what you feel like is most important, you know, for your family and that kind of thing when you're making decisions. But you know, especially businesses that cater to the senior population, which tends to be a little bit more vulnerable, you know, that they may see a little while before their numbers really get back to full capacity, even once they get the green light to reopen things. So time will tell. I certainly think that every family is kind of going to make their own decisions, regardless of what the governor says. But I think that you should have confidence in the fact that the governor put the brakes on opening all these temporary facilities for overflow at hospitals, because as you've said, Chris, the numbers just don't show that we've had that overrun. Even if people are being diagnosed with COVID-19, the number of hospitalizations remains low compared to the number that the hospital, you know, can actually have in. The number of ventilators hasn't been an issue, you know, whereas PPE and personal protective equipment was an issue for a lot of doctors' offices and hospitals and things like that initially. It seems that Virginia has a good hold on that now, and they have a constant supply, and now they have a way to clean the PPE equipment for reuse as well. So things are definitely moving in the right direction as far as being prepared. And we have to remember too, Chris, that the reason that the governor put all these lockdowns in place, put the stay-at-home order in place, wasn't just about the spread of COVID. It was about the fact that as a state, as a nation, we were unprepared for it. We didn't have that PPE. You know, we didn't really have enough ventilators in our system in the case that we were overrun. And those are measures that have now been corrected. So I think in a lot of ways, you know, whether it's COVID-19 or the next thing to come down the line that we may face, perhaps we've learned from this and we'll be more better prepared, you know, as a state and as a nation to deal with it.
And I wanted to emphasize, the governor in his remarks today really did emphasize what you're talking about there, Crystal. He talked about how this has bought us time. That's all it was. All the lockdown was intended to do was to buy us time. Now, other states are taking different approaches. California, reading the plan from Governor Newsom out there in California, man, I'm glad we're not in California. I mean, it looks like unless he changes, which he'll have to, as the rest of the country opens up slowly, he'll have to amend what he's thrown down. But Governor Northam, I want to give him credit because I've been very critical of him, and he deserved it. His rhetoric early in this process, you know, he's been doing these three times a week press conferences, and for weeks, his rhetoric was just in line with what I've been critical of for the mainstream media, in terms of he was using the same dark imagery. We're going to be in this for the long haul, and giving no end dates and everything like that. In the last week, maybe last 10 days, his rhetoric has changed dramatically. And I think it's because of a deepening, he hasn't said this and we don't have any indication of this, but it seems to me the reflection of a deepening realization within his team, his inner circle, that things aren't as bad as they seem to be maybe a few weeks ago. And I can understand, I've said this before, and I think it bears repeating, that 2 months ago when we were given those models that said 2.2 million Americans might die if we don't do anything, and even if we do things, 500,000 will die, whatever the number will be. You can't look at that as unprepared as we were and then do nothing. You have to do something. As that has evolved, as our understanding has evolved, continues to evolve, every hour of every day we learn more that makes us realize that maybe we're pulling through this better than we thought. Actually, we are. But we learn more. And so as that's become one, some governors have not adapted their language. Governor Northam, who I've been very critical of, has definitely tempered his language. And today made the point that, look, we got to come out of this. We got to come out of it slowly, but we got to come out of this. And so, you know, to me, that's reassuring. You know, I'm not sure if the average Virginian who watches this would see that. But for me, as someone who's been critical of him, I'm seeing much more positivity out of our governor. It's tempered positivity. Look, he's not jumping up and down, waving pom-poms, saying it's all over, with a sign behind him saying mission accomplished. But he's very, in his own way, I think he's trying to reassure Virginians that, look, we're getting through this. And, you know, and there was even some talk today about the big problem. And I think this is something this is maybe not the conversation we're going to have today, but I've been writing about this a lot on Augusta Free Press the last few days. The tragedy is in Virginia nursing homes and nursing homes across the country. 60% of the deaths in the states that are reporting nursing home deaths as a subset of all their deaths overall. And only 23 states are doing so. So we don't have full numbers for the whole country, but you can extrapolate that if almost half the country is reporting deaths and 60% of them are in nursing homes, that you can say that that's the case. And we need to put more emphasis on those situations. You know, what's going on in our nursing homes is abysmal. It's a tragedy. And the fact that we've shut down everything else and then we didn't take care of the one group of people most vulnerable to this is something that we as a nation are going to have to deal with when we do the after action reports on this in 6 months, a year, whenever that might be. But in the meantime, at least in Virginia, it seems like Governor Northam's team are actually starting to pay more attention. They should have done this 8 weeks ago, but they're starting to pay more attention to the situation on nursing homes. And hopefully if we can get some handle on the nursing home situation, that itself will take care of those scary numbers. You know, the case numbers shouldn't be scary. A person getting COVID isn't going to kill that person. It's likely going to kill them, though, if they're a senior, if they're in a nursing home, if they have comorbidities, all those things together. So if we can take care of our folks in nursing homes, we can take care of the scary numbers, and maybe that'll help get people more confident to go out and do the things they need to do in their daily lives.
Well, good breakdown there, Chris, and hope the information was helpful to those of you who tuned in as well. I'm sure that the governor will put forth some additional information on his website as well, and we'll continue to report on it in the coming weeks. So as we look forward to whatever this new date is going to be for phase two to start, we'll continue to monitor that so we can kind of give you the latest information as we have it. So definitely encourage you to go to AugustaFreePress.com. You can share the story related to what we're talking about here, the governor's news conference today, as well as additional information. You know, check out our Facebook page as well. We appreciate you following us there and hope that this information is helpful as you move forward to making plans in your own life, whether you're a business owner or whether you're just a patron, whether you're an employee or a business, you know, is trying to make decisions about what to do next. So Chris, anything you want to add before we sign off for today?
Yeah, the only thing that distresses me today, see, there's a lot of positive stuff out there as far as I'm concerned. That weather forecast for tonight and tomorrow is not good.
Cover your plans, people. I know. Seriously, Chris, it's so rare to get this kind of cold weather this time of year, but I know sometimes you say you should listen to your mother, and this is one of those cases where maybe I should have. She always says not to put any plants in the ground until May 15th or later because of past experience. So maybe I'm not listening to her well enough because I've already planted things. I guess tonight the freeze warning is in effect really from tonight, Friday night through Sunday morning at 10 a.m. So my advice is if you've got potted plants that you can bring indoors, do so. For other things outside, like my azalea bushes that are blooming beautifully right now, I'm going to cover those with a sheet and hope for the best. You know, it is already windy outside. You can already feel it getting colder. Like, I'm definitely going to wear a jacket here when I run out here in a little bit to run a couple of errands. But definitely for those of you that want to preserve whatever you have planted, cover them. I've got a couple tomato plants outside. I'm definitely going to have to cover those and hope for the best.
Yeah, Wednesday of next week, 69, Thursday, 69, Friday, 76, next weekend in the upper 70s. But we got to get through tomorrow. 52 for the high. Wind chill is an issue tomorrow. 31 overnight, 34 overnight Saturday. And then things get a little bit back to normal. But man, oh man, yeah, well, it's May. It's May. We're supposed to be outside and enjoying the flowers and all
next
that
weekend.
Kind of stuff.
You're going to have to wait till next weekend for that. But it does look very promising for next weekend. So as that phase one begins on Friday, May 15th. It looks like the weather will also be very nice for us.
Find yourself an outdoor brewery setting with 50% capacity that decides to open.
My fingers are crossed that some of those breweries on 151 might think about opening up there in Nelson County. I know Bold Rock sent out a survey of its patrons yesterday trying to get a feel for what kind of safety things are most important to you, whether their employees should be wearing gloves, whether patrons should have to wear masks, you know, things about ordering and that kind of thing as well. So they're definitely gearing up. They're trying to get a sense for how the community feels about what will make them feel safe. And then, yeah, my fingers are crossed that places like, you know, Wild Wolf and Bold Rock and Blue Mountain that have major outdoor seating capacity, that perhaps they'll look at opening up.
Yes, indeed. That's what we're going to leave you with here on this Friday, is the idea that next weekend you might be able to go out and enjoy some of that, especially for those of us in our part of the woods where we're so close to that 151 corridor. That's one of the more popular places in all of Virginia to be able to enjoy a good weekend day. So, well, Crystal, I think we'll go ahead and sign off. For Crystal Graham, I am Chris Graham. Thank you for joining us here on our show, and we will talk to you again soon.